The Veterans Report is sponsored by James Cannon.
Welcome to the Veterans Report, the region's only show dedicated to those who have served our country. We have the latest news and information on resources available to veterans, including health care, education, employment tips, local volunteer organizations, and more. To those who have served, those who are serving, and to those who will, we salute you. And now, the host of the Veterans Report, Jim Cannon.
And we are back on the Veterans Report. Thanks for hanging in there and listening. We have with us, I know I've been talking about this for some time, we have with us Major General Eric Weller, who is the Deputy Adjutant General for Veterans Affairs for the state of Pennsylvania. General Weller, how are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot. Obviously, there's a lot. You know, every state, for the listeners, every state has their own Department of Veterans Affairs that handle things at the state level that are sort of, they run in parallel or they're similar to those at the federal level. And General Weller, you are here to talk about specifically Pennsylvania and how the State Department of Military and Veterans Affairs handles a number of things. But there are some higher initiatives here. There are a couple of key points that we want to hit today. And so we're just going to sort of run through what the State Department does, what they are, what's their mission, and then we'll hit these high points. So give me a little bit of background or information on Pennsylvania's Military and Veterans Affairs Office.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'll start off with the fact that we have a staff of a little bit over 2,000 people. Most of those people are associated with our veterans' homes. But our primary job is to educate veterans on what their benefits are, create the awareness, and also help with the accessibility. In other words, take away as many roadblocks as we can so that they can garner those benefits. As such, we oversee the work at six state veterans' homes. We have homes throughout the state. We've got two in the Philadelphia area, one in the Pittsburgh area, one in Altoona, one in the Wilkes-Barre area, and one up in Erie. They handle approximately 1,300 patients or residents for both personal care and skilled care. So that's actually one of our programs, and actually that takes up the bulk of our employees. On top of that, we run a number of state veterans programs, benefit programs, you know, for blind and paralyzed veterans, amputees, that type of thing. We help the counties monitor the real estate tax exemption program. We also oversee the Persian Gulf bonus program. You know, we are the prime provider of DD-214s, or I would say exit paperwork for military members when they need documentation to show that they were actually in the military. We oversee the burial honors program. We provide money to the DAV for veterans transportation throughout the state. That's pretty much just to name a few. One other important thing that we do, though, is we also have a grant program for veteran service officers throughout the state. And with that program, we certify membership from a number of different service organizations, from like the AMVETS, American Legion, VFW, and train these people so that they can help any individual in the state who's a veteran file for their veterans' federal claims. And then on top of that, you know, we really, our primary focus is just to network amongst all of the agencies throughout the state. We have a great relationship with the county commissioners. In fact, two of the folks in our office are ex officios in their Veterans Affairs Committee. We work closely with the county directors for Veterans Affairs. We provide information to the Pennsylvania War Veterans Council, which is a 501(c) made up of all the different organizations, and they basically are kind of a legislative arm of all of their organizations. So we give them updates on different programs that we're working on and hear what their issues are and you know, try to focus on the topics that are of concern to them. We also co-chair the State Veterans Commission, which is, again, another commission that was formed in order to provide advice to the Adjutant General in relation to, you know, veterans issues throughout the state. And one of the things I'm actually most proud of is the fact that, you know, we chair the Governor's Advisory Council for Veterans Services, which is made up of the body of most of the state agencies that, you know, have oversight on different programs that touch upon veterans, whether it's mental health, you know, again, the veterans' homes, small businesses, education, so on and so forth. So we work with these agencies to try to figure out how we can, you know, potentially carve out just a little piece of their, you know, of their program specifically for veterans. So that pretty much, you know, is a wrap on everything that we're involved with.
Just one or two things. You know.
Sure.
Man, when do you guys sleep?
Well, I tell you what, I'm so lucky. We've got so many good people working with us. It's just absolutely fantastic. And I got to tell you, it's not just, you know, state employees that we have. You know, in the time that I've been on this job, it's, you know, been about 16 or 17 months, I've gotten to meet so many people throughout the state that are willing to give their time and money for veterans. And I'm talking about federal employees, state employees, county employees, but also folks from these service organizations and the 501(c)s. It's just absolutely fantastic how these people have pulled together in all the regions of our state and are just willing to do anything they can to help veterans. So, you know, the fact that we may not get too much sleep is okay, because I know there's a lot of people out there that also don't get sleep for the same reason. And it's all good reasons.
Absolutely. And you know, it's I always remind listeners of this, that Pennsylvania has, at last check, we have the fourth largest veteran population in the United States, which is astounding when you consider the other states that are in that list, right? California, Florida, Texas, and here's little Pennsylvania with this huge veteran population. So what your department is doing, you know, the existence of your organization is vital, but what you're doing is even more so, considering the number of vets in our state.
Right, right. Yeah, and believe me, you know, we really try to reach out to each and every one of them. You know, we've actually established a veterans registry. If I can just tell you what the website is real quick.
Sure.
www.register.dmva.pa.gov. Basically, what we do, if people register on there, and again, it's kind of a harmless thing. You get a newsletter, I believe it's every week, that talks about veterans events, veteran employment opportunities, and just generally veterans issues. And quite frankly, on the same website, it's kind of a one-stop shopping. It you know, we try to make it easy for you to find, you know, any type of information that you would need. Some of the most important information, though, is the sheets that are out there that show where the veteran service officers are in your area, and also the county directors for Veterans Affairs. So we try to make it a one-stop shopping, but, you know, the information is out there, and we try to add to it each and every day.
So you mentioned this, and that was one of the points I wanted to get to, was the registry and the website. It has a, because I stopped by, I went through all the stuff, I ran through all of it. So the registry, you enter your name and your contact info, and then you basically check boxes in terms of what you want to receive or what kind of information you're looking for. My question is, if I'm a veteran in Pennsylvania, and this might sound simple, but do I have to register on that website in order to get information? Or is it is it just meant to sort of streamline things?
Yeah, it's just really just meant to sort of streamline things. I mean, you can go to the website without registering and still get the same information. If you register, though, what that entitles you to is that newsletter that comes out on a weekly basis. You know, and again, we just try to pick out as much pertinent information as we can, you know, newsworthy, that type of stuff, you know, that people might be interested in. But like you say, you don't have to sign up for the letter in order to get on the or to look at the website.
No, it's a fantastic idea, and it's definitely keeping up with the times. So, you know, you're to be commended for that, because I think a lot of agencies, even though they're doing their best, they're giving it a good effort, they're a little out of step with technology, and you guys seem to be spot on with that in terms of, you know, having an online presence. So that's great. Typically, here's another question. If I sign up for that, about how long does it take before I can start getting or receiving information via signing up? Is it an immediate thing?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah, I think right away, you know, you get a notification that you have signed up, and then the following Wednesday, I believe, is when the newsletter comes out, and that's when you start receiving it.
So let's encourage everybody to stop by and there is a menu of options there, so you don't have to pick. You're not going to get inundated with everything you don't want. It's very specific. Mm-hmm. So let's jump to this Wall of Faces program. If you can talk about that for a minute, because this is pretty intriguing, and there's also sort of a I don't know, and we'll touch on what's up to date, but as of March 28th. There was still some information out there that was local to our area, but if you could talk about this, you know, offer some details on it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, basically it's a program. Centering around Vietnam veterans, you know, that obviously lost their lives, and you know, we're trying to honor them by getting their pictures on a wall of faces at the D.C. Memorial. In the state, we still need about 34 photos, and as you mentioned, or may not have mentioned, that we still have two photos needed in Allegheny County. And unfortunately, I don't have the names on me. But again, we've got the information online, and if you just go online to www.veterans.pa.gov, click on the Wall of Faces, and it'll show you the outstanding pictures that we are still looking for, or names, I'm sorry, of pictures that we're still looking for.
So,
and,
I mean,
you know, and again, it's out there to, you know, honor veterans, fallen veterans.
So, I mean, it's pretty astounding that you only have so many that are still missing, right? I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. I can't even tell you how many we started out with. They're writing it down for me right now. It was over 3,000. And, you know, in just a short period of time, with the help of the public, we've been able to narrow it down to, like I say, 34 throughout the state and then two in Allegheny County.
That is amazing. So, dumb question here, but the two in Allegheny County, or, well, really any of them, right, any of the faces that are missing, what do you think, or what maybe there's a basis behind it, why can't you get the pictures from those for those folks?
It could be that the folks might have moved out of the area. That, you know, perhaps any relatives they did have also passed. You know, it's probably could be a myriad of reasons. The one thing I don't think is that people don't want to be identified. I think people, you know, are actually proud to have their, you know, have that type of recognition for their relatives. You know, like I say, I'm sure there's photos out there. We just haven't overturned every rock, but we'll get there.
Well, I am gonna post there's a link to a map on there, or there was a list. There was a graphic that had the list of names.
Uh-huh.
If that's still current, I'm gonna post that on Facebook and Twitter and share it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So is this is a nationwide effort, state by state?
Yeah, nationwide effort. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I'm looking for some other stuff here. So we totally skipped over, and this is my fault. I apologize. I wanted to talk about the state veterans' homes. Those have always intrigued me, mm-hmm. and I only learned about them probably a year ago. I didn't even know the state had them, and that sounds horrible. They are beautiful places. I mean, these are not your run-of-the-mill sort of retirement homes. These things are gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, like you say, and the folks that... you know, that work there, I mean, keep them in good repair. And, you know, we have our own engineers and everything that schedule, you know, upgraded construction for each one of the homes on an annual basis. But, you know, the folks there do a fantastic job in taking care of the homes. I mean, when you walk in there, you don't smell any odd smells or anything like that. And, you know, they are just fantastic facilities. Even our oldest facility up in the Erie is, you know, is just awesome.
So now they have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they have like, depending on what home you're in, or depending on what site it is, there's on-site medical care, there are pharmacies, there's recreation. What are some of the other amenities to these homes?
Well, I mean, the biggest amenity is that there's other veterans there. Probably 88% of the folks living in the homes are veterans. The other 12% are either veterans without benefits, i.e., National Guardsmen and reservists that may not have deployed and received a DD-214, and then the other probably 5 or 6% are spouses of veterans. So that is the biggest amenity, just being around other veterans, and you just would not believe what that does for a person's morale. As you mentioned, I mean, we always have a ton of activities for these folks. I mean, if they're going to be aging in place, we want to do our best to make their life as enjoyable as possible in their waning years. A statistic that's kind of unfortunate is that, you know, generally the average stay is probably 2 years in our homes, and that's when people normally expire. Because we do receive people that, you know, do have some serious health conditions. But we have, obviously doctors, registered nurses, LPNs, certified nurse assistants in abundance at these homes to take care of, pretty much their each and every, or the residents' each and every need. We also have, psychologists on board, physical therapy, folks that we've contracted out with. It's just absolutely amazing the number of activities that we have for these people, the residents, every day. And plus they get three hot meals and a place to sleep, which is, primary for any veteran.
Well, now, speaking of the veterans and the folks staying there, what are there criteria for which veterans are eligible for this? Is it any vet, or are there particular eras?
Actually, any vet. The only criteria is there is none, other than that you're a veteran or a veteran without benefits or the spouse of a veteran. The one thing that we do look at, obviously, it's a benevolent type program, so we do take a look at income, those types of things, and then based on your income, your daily rate is set as a result. So we do have some people that actually pay the full cost, and that's because they can afford to. Unfortunately, most of the other people that we have, cannot afford that. I would say on the average, out of pocket, across the board, our folks can afford to pay maybe $40 a day. The rest of the money we receive comes from our state budget, our federal budget, which we do receive federal reimbursement, and then also, insurances and things like that.
Yeah, because that was, and I'm glad you brought that up. That was going to be one of my follow-up questions, is who bears the cost of this?
Right. So. Yeah, so like I say, I mean, it's kind of a combination between federal, state insurances and, what the individual, can ultimately afford on their own. The other thing I'd like to point out, though, is that, when you're dealing with private care facilities, one of the first things they look at is your estate value. And although we may look at the value, we don't touch a person's estate, which is kind of, again, different than, private care facilities. That's the first thing they look at when they look at your daily maintenance fees. They'll start tapping into your estate. For us, what happens is after a person expires, that's when we take a look at it. And sometimes we'll step in line with other creditors if there's, an estate of value there. But the other thing we take into consideration is the people that the resident has left behind. We're just not in the business of removing a spouse from a home. Obviously, the spouse needs a place to live. So I would say that that's probably one of the biggest selling points that we have, is the fact that we do not go after estates up front.
So how do people pay for this?
Well, again, through federal reimbursement, through pensions, that type of thing. Mm.
Now, you mentioned spouses. So spouses, yes, are eligible for these as well?
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, now the spouses would, they would, unless they were a veteran also, they would generally pay the full cost of care.
So does the state, does Pennsylvania own these homes outright?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
So they're not, there's not some kind of a lease arrangement. This is, you have full boat on these deeds.
That's correct. Yeah. The state owns all six facilities. And I would say that, you know, in conjunction with the federal VA, who's been a great partner, anytime we do an upgrade, for the most part, if there's significant upgrades, actually the federal VA kicks in 66% of the cost.
Oh, wow. That's helpful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That is amazing. And so if somebody needs to get into one of these homes, if they need to get a parent lined up for one of these or arrange it, how do they do it? Do they start with your office?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, the application forms and the numbers are right on our website. All the information is right there. And what we'll do is we put you in touch with the admissions officer at whichever home you're looking to get into, and help put the paperwork together, and obviously guide you through any records needs that you may have, i.e. if you needed a DT or to find your DD-214, we've got places we can go to get that type of information. So, but it's all right there on our DMVA website.
And all of that information, the links we're going to post on the Facebook and we'll share it on Twitter as well for all of this stuff. So one more high point here. Back a couple of weeks ago, I guess probably 3 weeks ago, almost four, there was a story that came out, and I think I read it during one of the shows here. It was about the governor's office announced Veterans Trust Fund grant awards, and some money went to counties, veterans affairs offices, and some VSOs out there. Can you walk through the details of that, and really, what does that mean for vets?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Basically, we've been able to establish a trust fund, and what we out of that trust fund, we provide grants to various 501(c)s throughout the state. We do this on an annual basis, and then. Usually it's about $600,000, I believe, and then another $150,000 for the county directors for Veterans Affairs. Generally speaking, each year the requirements may change slightly, but generally speaking, we're interested in any organization that is providing some type of service to veterans, i.e., transportation for veterans. People that are involved with homeless veterans, people that are involved with mental health issues in relation to veterans. And actually, I can point out that most recently we've got two recipients in Allegheny County, the Travelers Aid Society and the Veterans Leadership Program of Western PA. The other thing, if I could just throw one more thing in there, mm-hmm. the way we maintain the grant is basically through donations. So if you're renewing your driver's license or getting a photo ID or registering your vehicle, there's that check mark on there that says would you be willing to donate $3 to the Veterans Trust Fund. And again, 100% of that money goes right to veterans. So please don't hesitate to check that box, because you're putting in for a worthy cause.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to mention it. A lot of times, you go to various offices or whatever it is, and there's always that question on there, would you like to donate X amount? And, for years I've always thought, I wonder if they actually do anything with that. But in this case, the money really does go to something.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, we ensure that we audit each organization that we give money to. We go and inspect them. It is a great program, but I can guarantee up front that each and every dollar goes towards the veteran.
So that's an important reminder. So anybody out there renewing your driver's license, if you see the box that asks if you want to donate money to this, say yes, because it's being used.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and again, plus if you want to give more than $3, you can go right back to our website, and I've got another one for you, www.donate.dmva.pa.gov, and you can send in dollars that way also. And believe me, that money is much appreciated.
Well, and again, it's all it's being used properly, and it's all transparent, and you can see the results out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir.
So that's important. So those are kind of the nice high points, the positives. We have a couple of minutes. I wanted to get your take, and I don't know if you want to offer a personal take or a take on, you know, the part of on behalf of the department, but the opioid crisis in our state. I know the governor recently renewed his declaration. I think it was, I forget the wording, but it's an emergency, right? A health emergency or health crisis. It affects everybody across the board, but there is a, you know, the veteran community has been particularly hard hit. What do we do? I mean, I know that's a lofty question, but what do we do to tackle this thing?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, kudos to the governor for, you know, establishing this initiative. You know, my boss, General Corelli, has been, very hands-on with this, with the warm handoff community meetings. And again, the initiative is, how do you get somebody from the emergency room directly into a treatment center? As you say, obviously it does affect, veterans just like it does anybody else. And it's a great program, but I think the best thing we can do is share information, identify the facilities that are able to deal with these addictions, and, you know, just have the courage to identify the people that need the help and get them to those facilities. That's one of the things that, you know, although we're not funded at DMVA to, deal with the opioid crisis out of our own budget, you know, we definitely are working with the other agencies like DHS, to find out who those premier facilities are that we can take our people to and address whatever the problems are that, that they have. And again, it's important for us, not to drop our folks off at just any facility. We really look for facilities that have experience in dealing with veterans. They are, different type of people, and obviously there's always a trust issue when it comes to a veteran. So slowly but surely we're starting to identify some of these organizations, what we do is, once we, get or identify people that are candidates for those types of programs, I mean, we go in and help the 501(c)(3) or the organization identify what benefits the veteran has coming that could help defray costs, so on and so forth. We do take the program seriously, but as I mentioned, we are not funded for the program in DMVA, but as I mentioned, through the graciousness of a lot of these 501(c)(3), we've just really been able to establish good partnerships so that we have a place where we can take our folks to.
Yeah, it's a scary situation for everybody involved, and this is one of those things where politics has to be sort of tabled in search of a solution. So it's I don't envy you. I mean, you guys have a huge task in front of you as well. So. We're about out of time, unfortunately, because I would like to keep you on the phone for another 3 or 4 hours.
But, sure, anytime, I'd be happy. I'd be happy to talk veterans issues.
Well, hey, you are welcome back anytime, really. And, if there's a new initiative you want to highlight or something going on that you want people to know about, absolutely, we'll get you on.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate it. Hey, if I could just throw in one more thing. We had talked about the Wall of Faces and the two missing pictures in Allegheny County. One is John E. Hughes Jr. out of Pittsburgh. He was a Marine, and Booker Smith Jr. out of Pittsburgh, and he was a Marine. So if anybody's out there listening and you know those names, if they're related to you or you've got pictures of them, please send them in.
We'll get those names out there. Retired Major General Eric Weller with the Pennsylvania Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Sir, thank you again.
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate your time, sir.
Yes, sir. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you want to keep up with the latest in veteran news away from the radio, stop by our website at www.theveteransreport.com. There you'll find news headlines, along with links to media outlets around the world. You can also find links to every state's veteran services office. And for you film buffs, there's even a link to a war movie database. We appreciate you stopping by the Facebook page, at facebook.com/theveteransreport. There, like the website, you'll find the latest news and information related to veterans. For you high-speed individuals who want to limit yourself to 140 characters, stop by our Twitter account. It's a great way to find information on veteran organizations throughout the country and what they're up to. You can tweet us by using @TheVetsReport. If you'd like to email the show directly, please send us your input, comments, or suggestions to editor@TheVeteransReport.com. Thanks again for checking out our pages. Thanks for listening, and thank you for supporting our veterans community. Welcome back. We appreciate you hanging in there, and we hope you enjoyed the interview with General Weller. I'd love to have him back. We often are quick to criticize government agencies. You know, I have, other folks have, but it sounds like, at least from General Weller's comments and standpoint, it sounds like Pennsylvania is doing a lot more than I will admit that I was aware of. So kudos to the general, kudos to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for the state. So hopefully, if you're listening out of state, if you have an opportunity to check out what your state is doing, you know, I encourage you to do so. You might be pleasantly surprised. So, again, General Weller, thank you for that. Good information. So, yeah, we kind of did things in reverse today. We did the interview first, and we're going to cover down on a little bit of news here. I do want to give a shout out to our friends at WTF Nation Radio. Last week, we had Hire Our Heroes as our special guest. And coming up, if I have the date in front, I don't have the date in front. I think it's April 25th. Hopefully, WTF Nation will call me and let me know if I'm incorrect. But I think it's April 25th. Hire Our Heroes is going to have an online, they're conducting an online job fair through WTF Nation. So if you have time, I encourage you to jump on there and check it out. It's going to be kind of cool to do it online. I've never participated in something like that, and it's definitely a unique approach. Hire Our Heroes is doing awesome things for vets as well. They have a lot of stuff lined up. They just partnered with Skillsoft, so the combination of that along with our online partners is going to be magic, just magic. So I got to tell you, just a little bit of a tangent. I went and got a new phone today, right? I don't know if you've bought a new cell phone lately. Oh, just buzzed. I don't know if you heard that. And guess what? It is. Let me see if I've got a new phone. So I'm sort of stumbling through where all the stuff is, and it says I have a message. Oh, I just had the messenger. Oh, messenger. Here we go. Hit the arrow. Okay, so WTF Nation, the wonders of technology, they hit me up, and it says I was correct on the date, April 25th, the time for the WTF Nation Radio Hire Our Heroes Career Fair, April 25th, 12 to 3 p.m. For those of you who oblah, that's 1200 to 1500 on April 25th, that's Eastern Standard Time, because frankly, the East Coast matters more than anyone else. I'm just kidding. Or am I? So yeah, 12 to 3, April 25th. So jump on the website, their website, on WTF Nation Radio, and check it out. If you're looking for a new job, if you're just browsing around to sort of get more up to speed with an online presence, try it. Like I said, Hire Our Heroes as they explained last week, there's a ton of stuff they do, a ton of certifications, really, that they offer. That's the partnership with Skillsoft, and you can get qualified. I think one of the big things we talked about was cybersecurity, right? So cybersecurity is the new, it's going to be sort of the new direction where a lot of this stuff is headed in terms of IT. And frankly, I mean, cybersecurity is kind of a cool field anyway, right? So you can figure out all the backdoor stuff and, the secret squirrel world of cyber technology. But, yeah, again, check them out April 25th, 12 to 3 Eastern Standard Time on WTF Nation Radio. So what was I saying? Oh, so I went to get a new phone today, right? And usually it's grueling because you have to go through all the nonsense, the sales pitch, right? You have to figure out what you want, set up your bill. I got to tell you, I had somebody awesome today. Her name was Carrie Ann. She was with Verizon, and I just wanted to recognize her for being helpful, and we had a good time doing this. It took a while, but overall, a really good experience, and I have stepped into the realm of new technology. I got one of these, I don't know, what is it, a Gear? The Gear Watch, or whatever it's called, Verizon Gear, and I'm wearing it right now, and it's kind of cool. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it looks like a big wristwatch that syncs up with your phone, and you can text on it, and you can email from it. You can even make calls from this watch, so you can set it up where you leave your phone somewhere. You can leave your phone at home, wear this watch, right? And that's what it just looks like, a watch, and it's synced to everything in your phone. So if you go to the gym, you don't need your phone. When I work out, I use wireless headphones, and I used to have to bring my cell phone with me and set it down on the floor, right, and sync up the headphones to the actual cell phone. And now I can just wear this watch. So pretty cool. I'm excited. Again, Carrie Ann, you're awesome. And if you're going out to buy a new phone, there are a ton of choices. I happen to go with the Samsung 9. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of cool that, you know, Dick Tracy predicted, 85 years ago, 90 years ago, that they'd have those wristwatch phones, and now they're here. And I'm wearing one. So kudos to me for figuring that out. So last week, I have to get to the news now. So last week, I covered a story about Amtrak. You might know about Amtrak, the rail line. They had announced that they were doing away with their veterans discount, which was 15%. They started it in 2001, right? And they had been offering it ever since, but they claimed since not enough veterans were using it, that they were going to get rid of it, which that kind of logic boggles my mind. I could see if you wanted to stop spending money on the marketing end of that, maybe stop advertising that you have a 15% discount, but so what? If not enough people are using it, then how is it? It's not hurting your financial bottom line. That's dumb. At the time, I wasn't sure. I had thought that Amtrak had been funded or partially by the federal government. So I did some research, and I was correct. I mean, look, please forgive me. It's not like I look into Amtrak very often, right? Probably as often as most of you ride them. So I found a story that President Trump, had proposed, this might have already gone through as part of the budget, but he was proposing some time ago to cut federal grants to Amtrak from nearly $1.2 billion to $538 million starting October 1st. And the budget would also cut grants to the Northeast Corridor from $328 million to $200 million. So, yeah, I knew they were getting federal dollars. I didn't realize it was that dramatic. Now, they're claiming, Amtrak is claiming, they handle 31 million people per year. So I don't know what the validity is in terms of that, you know, the ridership numbers. But over $1 billion just for Amtrak. Now, part of Trump's infrastructure proposal, again, I don't know if this was part of the budget that passed because nobody talked about it and I didn't read it. Part of his proposal was to shift $200 billion from somewhere else in the budget to attract $1 trillion from local governments and private investors for transportation infrastructure. But again, I don't know if that passed. I was going to read another number that they're claiming here. 820,000 people ride trains each day along the Northeast Corridor from Washington, D.C. to Boston. Okay, so that's the entire Northeast Corridor. That's not Amtrak. Got it. 800,000 people a day from D.C. to Boston. That's a lot. I didn't realize it was that many. Now, the story I found also listed a bunch of Amtrak accidents. So there's that. But I'm not going to, I don't want to walk through that. I don't want to beat up Amtrak too badly. So another, I also found, so veteran suicide, we've covered that. A lot of people have covered that. That's been a big, big spotlight issue recently, right? Oh, and I do want to point out all of this news, right? All of these stories are available on the Facebook page. They're also on the website, theveteransreport.com. That's all one word, theveteransreport.com. And if you go to the website, you can jump from there, go to the bottom. You'll find the links to Facebook. You'll find the link to the Twitter account. On the website itself, if you go up to the top, there's like a drop-down menus. One of them says, you're going to have news, but one of them says radio. If you hit that, that brings you to all of the past shows. Those are housed on the website. So if there was a guest you liked, there was a show you liked, Black Rifle Coffee, Call of Duty Foundation, Doug Stanton, the guy who wrote the book for that 12 Strong was based on, et cetera. Rick Saccone, his recent election made national news. Any of those shows are on the website. So if you hit the radio button, you can check them out. But anyway, back to so veteran suicide has been a big issue. Thomas Ricks, I don't know if any of you are familiar with him. He's written a bunch of books. One of them, I think, I'm trying to remember what year that came out. It was a long time ago. I think it was called Making the Core or something like that. And it was basically about how Marines are made. And then he wrote another one about, I think it was, I'm slipping up here. It had the word generals in it, the generals or something about the generals. And it was basically a book on leadership, U.S. leadership, military leadership from World War II until present day. But he's written a bunch of other books. He also wrote a book about Iraq that was somewhat critical of that. But I personally, and he's a little bit, if you're a conservative, I'd caution you ahead of time. He's not uber lefty, but he's in that ballpark. But I happen to like him. I happen to like his writing style. And it's very plain spoken, and it's very smooth the way he writes. And I don't mean like in a lazy way. I mean, he's a good writer. And I think he has a blog or a column on task and purpose now. But anyway, Thomas Ricks, a long time, I think he was with the Washington Post. Does that sound right? For years and years and years. Anyway, he penned his most recent piece, and it's entitled, Why Do So Many Veterans Kill Themselves? And it says, the suicide rate for veterans has gone up 35% since 2001. In part because of increases in post-9/11 veterans killing themselves. So it's the post-9/11 folks who sort of contributed to an uptick in the statistics, the numbers, right? And he starts out by saying, it began when I got a note from a vet in a dark place and contemplating the act. He'd served in Vietnam. His risk of suicide is 22% higher than that of his non-veteran peers, according to a report last year from the Department of Veterans Affairs. And so he goes on and he cites some more statistics. And he even admits in the piece, I know what I'm seeing around me is anecdotal, but it just doesn't feel right to me. What's going on here? So he lists four possibilities, right? A lost war, meaning people feeling like as the whole Middle East thing, you know, OIF, OEF, they sort of wind down. People are feeling like, well, okay, now what, right? We didn't quote unquote win. Death by rotation. Another theory is that everyone is born with just so much to give and that repeated deployments drain that reserve without replenishment. The third one is brain injury. And the fourth one he labels more to come. Or is it that depressed vets are responding to the whiff of another possible war on the horizon with North Korea? Anyway, I encourage you to check it out. There's a link on the website. There's a link on Facebook. Or you can just go look him up. Oh, his column. I'm sorry. His column is called The Long March. and lighten up the phone lines here. But his column is called The Long March, and if you have time, go check it out. He goes into more detail, and this is not the first time he's written about that particular topic. So he's covered veteran suicide more than once. And what else? There was a story about, a Texas church. What's the name of it? They have helped forgive $10 million in medical debt for veterans and local families. Pastor Stephen Hayes of Covenant Church, a Dallas-based megachurch, spent 12 days in intensive care after he was struck by a car and fell into a coma when he was a teenager. His father's church prayed around the clock for his healing. Hayes miraculously woke up from the coma, but his family was then bogged down with escalating medical bills. Fast forward, and he wanted to honor the tradition, so he teamed up with nonprofit group RIP Medical Debt. Now, that group is a debt collector turned debt forgiver, which acquires unpaid medical debt at greatly reduced rates and then forgives it. Every $1 donated to the group translates to $100 in debt paid off. Hayes and Covenant Church donated $100,000, which helped pay off a total of $10,551,000 in medical debt for 4,229 families in the Dallas area. How's that for cool? How is that for cool? That's paying it back, right? That's giving back. That's amazing. That is such a cool story. And the beauty of that is it's not, had nothing to do with the government, right? Just a church coming together, pairing up with another group out there and doing $10 million in medical debt. That's amazing. Good for them. I guess, last year, Stephen's father, Stephen Hayes, right? His father, Pastor Mike Hayes, started a relief fund called helpchurches.org that brought together a network of 50 churches to help raise money for victims of hurricanes that ravaged Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico, as well as the survivors of the Las Vegas shooting and the wildfires that swept through California. Very cool. So kudos to the pastor and the church. That would be Covenant Church in Dallas. So if you're down near Dallas, maybe stop by and at the very least tell them thank you. Say hi to them and tell them thank you. So is the VA being privatized? The Koch-backed group, Concerned Veterans of America, says it just wants choice, but veterans aren't so sure. This is from a Newsweek article, so you're going to have to take it with a grain of salt. However, when Dr. Shulkin left the VA, right, he wrote a scathing New York Times op-ed that said he was removed from his position because he opposed privatizing the nearly $200 billion agency. The White House denied it was considering privatizing the VA, but questions about privatizing the agency have dogged President Trump since the campaign trail. And it is sure to be a critical issue during the confirmation hearings for new VA Secretary nominee Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson, the White House physician. So basically what happened was Shulkin was ousted, right? Okay, so Dr. Shulkin was ousted from the VA one way or the other, right? So the White House is claiming that he quit on his own, and Shulkin is claiming he was fired. And so he wrote a really nasty op-ed in the New York Times that basically said he was let go because he didn't want to follow the marching orders of the White House to privatize the VA. Now, Concerned Veterans for America, which is backed by the Koch brothers, who have often been the target of liberal groups as like the evil twins, right? But Concerned Veterans for America has been, they've been dancing around it for a couple of years in terms of what they want to do and making suggestions about utilizing private care when it came to the VA, meaning the, exploring sort of a public-private partnership with the VA and medical facilities in the private sector. So basically the gist of this article, but this points to a bigger issue. The gist of this is that CVA is denying that it wants to privatize, right? And they are saying that really their goal, their ideological goal, is just to give veterans more choice in terms of seeking health care outside the government system. So as some of you might know, the VA Choice Program sort of allows for that, right? If there's there are certain provisions in the Choice Program where if you can't make an appointment or it's too far outside your radius, then you can seek alternate care from the private sector. But CVA has been really on board with that for a long time, right, in terms of maybe we should do that more. So now the concern is, I guess the overarching concern, this is opinion from me, is who's right? Is Shulkin right? Did the White House really want to privatize the VA system? In which case, you know, the concerned vets have pushed this off their plate. Or is the White House correct and Shulkin is using this as sort of a wedge? Or is it a mixture of the two, right? Was there some talk of privatization? Was there some pushback? And did it come to loggerheads? But again, you know, from my standpoint, I don't have an issue with utilizing private sector care when it comes to the VA. And by that, I don't necessarily mean replacing the VA. I think that's a little drastic, at least at this stage. I think the VA, as I've said many times, serves a purpose and overall serves a good purpose. There are those spot issues that give it sort of a black eye and do a disservice to the entire veteran community. But overall, the VA is a noble and worthy organization. But, okay, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't think anybody can argue that the private sector, nobody can argue against this. The private sector does a much better job with virtually everything than the government. That's fact. That is not opinion. That's fact. In almost every realm, the private sector does a better job. So if you're talking about the health and the welfare of 20 million Americans at some point, why would you not utilize the best options out there? And again, it's not a matter of replacing the entire VA. It's not a matter of wiping out the system. It's just a matter of combining with, coordinating with, cooperating with the private sector. Is it going to be more expensive? Yeah, it might be. But if you look at how the money at the VA is spent, I mean, there have been scandals. There was a scandal a couple years ago about the VA spending millions of dollars on stuff like furniture and artwork. And there were veterans dying because they were on waiting lists that took 6 to 8 months to get their first appointment. Right? So if you're going to spend money, spend it wisely. And the fact that the VA budget has climbed to astronomical levels, almost $200 billion since, was it $200 billion? Or maybe it's 80, no, maybe $100 billion. I don't want to exaggerate here, but their budget is massive, and the fact that they have that much money, I personally don't think private sector medical costs should be a concern right now. Further down the road, if you somehow create enough initiatives and private sector care is embedded, it's part and parcel to VA care at some point and not an anomaly or a weird sort of exception, yeah, then start looking at the cost. Then start doing the audits. Then start sort of trimming the fat and looking at the bookends. But right now, come on. Just why not, right? That should be it. Why not? I mean, if somebody had facts that were that would contradict that stance, I'd love to hear them. Please tell me the private sector does a worse job in terms of medical care. I don't know. All right, I'll get off the soapbox now. So last week, I'm going to have to get into the poll question here. Last week, we had a poll question about the Desert Storm War Memorial. And the question was, let me see if I can remember what the question was. The question was, do you agree with building a memorial to Desert Storm, considering how quick that thing was, right? From January 17th to February 28th. The combat phase of what we know as the Gulf War, right? Do you agree with building a war memorial for that? 100% of you who chimed in said yes. So you're patriots, apparently. 100%. So this week's poll question, and I appreciate everybody jumping on Facebook to vote. This week's new question, which is on the Facebook page, go there and vote, is, and I'll keep it real brief, there are over 40,000 registered, meaning with the IRS, registered nonprofits / charities related to veterans and their families in the United States. 40,000. And in some states, like New York, Texas, California, there are almost 3,000 per state. Okay, those are big numbers. Out of those registered charities, I'm not counting the scams and I'm not counting the mom and pop bingo parlor ones. I'm talking the ones that are on paper, right? 40,000. The question this week, the poll question is, do you think that's too many or do you think that's warranted and enough? So jump on Facebook, take a vote. And we will be back next week with the results of that, with more news and more guests. Until next time, I'm your host, Jim Cannon.
You've been listening to The Veterans Report. Let others know about the show. You can find us online at theveteransreport.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to editor@theveteransreport.com. Join us again at the same time for up-to-date veterans news and information. The Veterans Report. Thank you for your service and carry on.
The Veterans Report has been sponsored by James Cannon.